So I saw a question come in the chat room about false negative HRD. Can you comment on that, Joyce?
Yeah. Well, so I think that goes back to the idea that the HRD tests are an imperfect proxy, or Rob's smoke and fire sort of analogy. And so you can definitely have tests, you can definitely have tumors that test as being HR deficient that are not actually in reality HR deficient. They are perfectly HR proficient. So do you want me to...
And the other way around, too.
Or just the false negatives?
This next one is the real one I want to hear about. So if you decide that you're going to measure HRD and it's negative, and they're BRCA wild type, now we're saying optimal debulking surgery. The question is, what are you going to do? And wow, this is a pretty interesting spectrum that you see among the investigators, from not using a PARP inhibitor to using niraparib to using Bev without a PARP inhibitor. Rob, again, think about yourself seeing second opinions, where the first opinion might be either one of these first three choices. First of all, what your likely choice, Rob, and what do you think about the other choices?
So yeah, I think I chose Bev on this one. I hope I did. I think they're all could be used. I think many people there are many people that believe that Bev only works well enough to be used in suboptimal patients, and I'm not one of those. But some people do, and that's fine. And so these patients, all stage three, regardless if they're optimal or suboptimal, they're high risk for recurrence, no, regardless. And so at that patient population, in my experience, I would use Bev as a way to mitigate that risk for recurrence. But it's I can't argue with any of them. Certainly niraparib is approved now. But it's that's how I would choose it. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's interesting that a lot of people don't order HRD, and yet if you give them the result, they change what they do. It reminds me, when we do breast cancer with the surgeons, you say, would you use a genomic assay neoadjuvantly? They say no, and then we say, well, suppose somebody else did it and it was positive, and then they changed their therapy.
Right.
So it is kind of interesting about that observation. We go to the next one, we see the same situation, HRD negative, now suboptimal debulking. Now you see almost everybody using Bev.
Yeah.
But it still is not pushing it. It pushes a few people into using a PARP inhibitor, but not too many. Mm-hmm. This is HRD positive. And I would just say in general, just like I was saying about the somatic, that in general, it looks like the answers are similar. So if you do the assay, it looks like people are kind of paying attention to it. Although it's interesting.
Hey, Neil,
yeah, I was just going to question about the Bev.
Yeah, so the only question I have with this one, this came up before too, is that some people are using Pac-Tos carboplatinum and Bev followed by niraparib. So they're stopping the Bev and giving niraparib. And I think that the point of this, and this is an optimal patient, so I'm not really sure exactly this patient, I can see it in the suboptimal, but we know in 218, we showed that there was no benefit to giving it during chemotherapy if you did not continue it as maintenance. So I'm not quite sure about this. But I think that if you talked about a suboptimal patient, somebody may say, listen, I want to give them the best chance to have a response, and then I'm going to put them on a PARP. And that may be why you're seeing some of those choices. That came up before. I saw in one of your previous slides. Yeah.
That is interesting. I guess another question we had, if we can go to the next slide. We were talking before, and pretty much everybody now is using the same criteria that we were just talking about in terms of of dosing. Stephanie, any other comments about how you're approaching and making this decision about PARP or not, which PARP, and Bev or not?
Yeah, so I think as I said, and it's why Rob said that the bevacizumab was continuous maintenance. It's why I really emphasize the fact that it was a continuous data what we have for bevacizumab. In terms of, I think what is very different with the PARP inhibitor treatment, I think it's great for patients because it's a pills. But because it's a pills, we rely a lot on the patient taking it at home. And I think an important piece that we need to take into consideration is the education that we need to have to the patient, and the expectation as well that we hope for the for this kind of treatment. And I think talking about the toxicity, what the practicality of using the PARP inhibitor treatment, I think all of this context should definitely be explained to the patient, because globally, and as we can see in terms of PARP inhibitor treatment, we often say that it's well tolerated, because it's true, it's mainly grade 1 and 2. But as we say, it's a continuum, it's a switch maintenance for at least 2 years for laparib or 3 years for niraparib. So it's a long chronic treatment to take, and the grade 1 and 2 can be quite significant for a patient in the long term and for the quality of life. So I think it's another important thing to discuss with a patient when we introduce this treatment.
And of course, financial toxicity is another issue.